From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A key victory in Venezuela for President Nicolas Maduro and his ruling Socialist Party. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua, Nicaragua, Monday. Tony, this looks like an affirmation pretty strong terms of the Maduro government by the voters. Almost, the last report I saw, almost 6 million votes, which everyone was saying was an unattainable target, and a very lopsided victory, and also a victory against the boycott, because lots of people turned. The turnout was pretty much comparable to a U.S. presidential election.
Yeah, or to an election in neighboring Colombia, for example.
Right.
The final figure is over 9 million voters, which works out at something like 46% of the electorate, and the Nicolas Maduro's broad Polo Patriotico front, the Patriotic Pole front.
Right.
They won. They got over. They did get over 6 million. I think it was almost 6.2 million.
Right.
And if you compare that with the elections, the legislative elections back in 2015, back then, the opposition mobilized their supporters, and the Chavista vote didn't turn out. And back then there was 74% participation, and the opposition won. And I think they got something like 7 million votes, 8 million votes, something like that. All together.
Right.
So, it's almost impossible to compare this election with any other election, because the circumstances are so specific. And after 2 years of extreme polarization, last year was an extremely violent time in Venezuela. The violence only came to a stop in July with the Constituent Assembly, in which the government supporters mobilized very effectively, and I think a total of 8 million people voted in that election. So yeah. In this election, you've had a total of 9 million people voting.
Right.
The actual figure for the government is of over 6 million is a real triumph, and no matter how the opposition local media in Venezuela or how the opposition corporate media in North America and Europe play it, this is very much a personal triumph for Nicolas Maduro and for his policies, and a really powerful political triumph for the United Socialist Party of Venezuela and their political allies. Now, because, and even if the opposition had mobilized, and say that there'd been between 11 and 13,000 voters turning out, and of those extra vote, a lot of people didn't vote because they just assumed there was no point because Maduro was going to win anyway.
Right.
So a lot of the Chavista voters just didn't bother. So if you added, say, 2 or 3 million voters onto the number that did vote, Nicolas Maduro would still have won by a good margin. So it's difficult. It's difficult for anybody to kind of objectively claim that this isn't a genuine electoral victory. I know, of course it is, and when you put that in regional terms, and if you compare the election campaign and the election process in Venezuela with what's going on in Mexico, just for an example, and the Mexico's got a very complicated set of elections happening sometime in July, covering various different levels of the Mexican state's institutions, including most importantly the presidency. But since that electoral process began last year, something like October last year, and since that electoral process began, over 100 candidates have been killed.
Yeah.
And of course that barely gets reported in the Western corporate media. But I think it's a very valid comparison to show the comparative integrity and the incomparable integrity in many ways of Venezuela's electoral process and its electoral system in general.
Right.
So, and if you look at what's happening in Colombia, and in Colombia's election campaign, there's been very serious threats against candidates like Gustavo Petro, and I think a couple of people involved in the election campaign have also suffered actual political violence, if not been killed. But and since the start of the year, hardly a day has gone by without the murder of some community activist or some former FARC guerrilla or every violence is endemic in Colombia, in the country's political life. And so when you compare this recent electoral process in Venezuela with what's been going on in Mexico and Colombia, and Colombia goes to for its elections next Sunday on the 27th, a week after yesterday's election in Venezuela. But the comparison between Venezuela and its neighbors, or Colombia, Mexico, and even Brazil, and that's a whole other story, isn't it? But the comparison makes Venezuela look exemplary in terms of its electoral institutions and in terms of its electoral process.
Yeah, the Lima Group, they call themselves. Yeah, Peru, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Colombia, Honduras, you know, they issue a statement saying they don't recognize the legitimacy of the election. Well, who wrote it? Did Temer write it for Brazil? Or did the newly not elected president of Honduras write it that stole the election a few months ago? Or, you know, which one of these characters, Paraguay, did that coup government write it? I mean, which one of these characters wrote it? Mexico? Maybe we should let Mexico monitor the elections for the Western Hemisphere for a year, a rotating chair or something with Honduras and Brazil.
Yeah, and clearly in the regional context, and for those countries to question Venezuela's electoral process is ridiculous. But leaving the actual integrity of the electoral process and the unquestionable validity of the result to one side, you then have the question of what does that mean in regional terms, in terms of U.S. policy in the region, given that it's the United States government that is the most important player in terms of rolling back the gains of progressive governments between 2006 and 2013. Particular,
right.
And what this election is a very serious setback for the United States, the United States government.
There's another thing to look at too here. You know, the numbers that I'm looking at now from CILA that are published in Telesur. So it says about 6,190,612 for Maduro. Is that about what you show? Okay. So for him to win, you know, forget the right wing did what they did. they called a boycott. Did, was it honored? Was it not? I don't know. Falcone only got, he got less than 2 million votes. Okay.
Yeah, around 21%.
Okay. So, but in terms of absolute terms, back in 2012, when Chavez ran last time, turnout was 80%, 80.52%. Okay. And there were 14 million votes, 14 and a half million votes. Now, if you were to look at turnout of say 70%, this which is the U.S. the highest it's had in the last 50 years was in 2008 at 61%. Okay, so right. That's their baseline. In 1960, otherwise was in 62%. If that's their baseline, well, Maduro wins at 70% with the vote that he already has. If every other vote went for the other side.
Yeah. I know. The questioning the result is ridiculous.
Yep.
And the opposition have only themselves to blame that they boycotted the election. So now, you know, and they effectively disenfranchised their own supporters, which is likely to be another factor that will continue to leave the opposition politicians and their base, their electoral base, completely demoralized. And I know if you look back at what happened in 2005, I think it was in 2005 they had legislative elections in Venezuela, and there again the opposition boycotted that, and it was a really foolish mistake. And this is also another foolish mistake, because essentially what a majority of people in Venezuela have decided are that and they'd rather face all the difficulties imposed by the United States sanctions and the sanctions of other Latin American countries than accept a right-wing government of the stripe of Venezuela's opposition politicians. And that's what a damning indictment. You know, after 2 years of economic sanctions and boycott and all the extreme economic suffering that people have had to endure as a result of the sabotage of the economy, the inflation, abuse of the exchange rate, smuggling, you know, and as combined with European countries and other US allies boycotting the supply of food and medicines to ordinary people in Venezuela, despite all that. People in Venezuela decided by a majority vote to support President Maduro because they trust him. They trust him to solve their problems.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, can we start looking at the regional context?
I want to make sure people get this point here. If you look also at the 2012 election, which had Chavez, that was his last election, and that was the big effort behind Capriles. That was the opposition's biggest moment in these presidential elections since 1998. He's tied Maduro after everything that's happened in the last 6 years, is still tied with Capriles on that date.
Right.
So.
Right. So then, yeah, and the. And that's an important point to make as well. This was the 25th electoral process in Venezuela since 1998. The opposition have won two. Right?
Yep.
And so they won those two electoral processes using exactly the same electoral institutions and the same electoral mechanisms that they lost with the other 23. So, you know, there's no question that these elections are a tremendous milestone, a historic milestone for Venezuela, especially given the current context. But looking at the wider context in Latin America, and it looks as though the Lima Group countries, a total of 12 countries, all run by right-wing governments that more or less side one way or another with the United States government on a broad range, but not all. foreign policy issues. They've decided to try and isolate Venezuela. They've called their ambassadors back for consultations. and so it's likely that the United States and its allies are likely to intensify all the regime change measures that they have in their in that regime change repertoire.
Right.
And it remains to be seen how, you know, what will China and Russia do? They've already stated that that they recognize the validity of the elections in Venezuela, Maduro's election victory, and they expect other countries to do the same. They've already said that. The United States has said that it's not going to recognize the result, but no surprise there. And their allies in the region, the Lima Group mainly, and are not recognizing the result. But that still leaves the Organization of American States, for example, unable to take any measures against Venezuela because right. they do not have a majority in the Organization of American States to do so.
Right.
That's why they formed the Lima Group.
Right.
And the formation of the Lima Group is actually an admission of weakness on the part of the right wing in the region because they don't have a majority even in the U.S. kind of Ministry of the Colonies, which is the function of the Organization of American States. And this election result in Venezuela is a tremendous blow to this ridiculous idea of, you know, there's this unstoppable conservative restoration and the right wing are going to right. take over Latin America. And I think we have to look at it, stepping back even from the region, looking at it in a global sense.
Yeah.
Since 2005, most independent observers have been absolutely clear that from 2005 to that period in which the United States was unable to win the Iraq War, and from that period on, it's been absolutely clear that around now, 2019, 2020, 2021, that there was a window of opportunity for the United States and its allies to reach an accommodation with emerging global rivals like China, like Russia, like the BRICS countries, and for a time, and that might again become get renewed life over the next couple of years. We'll see. So much depends what happens in Brazil, but it was very clear that window of opportunity was closing, and that around now, 2019, 2020, and the United States would run out of options, and they've lost, to put it in that crass way, they've lost Eurasia. Okay,
yeah.
So what are their options? Their main option is to try and impose their will on the fabulous resource riches of Latin America.
Yeah.
And that obviously that's what they're doing, and that's what the so-called conservative restoration is all about. It's got nothing to do with democratic politics.
Or conservatism, or restorations. It has to do with resources.
It has to do with resources. And that is why this election in Venezuela is absolutely historic, because despite everything that the United States has done over the last 2-3 years to try and impose its will in the region, there are still centers like Venezuela and Bolivia, extraordinarily wealthy in resource terms, that resist it. Right. And so now what are they going to do? Their only real option is some kind of military action.
Right.
Because they've just lost. And this, their economic sanctions haven't worked. And it doesn't matter. I can't see what else they can do. They can intensify them. But Venezuela is resourceful enough to be able to deal with that and cope with that. And thanks to its global relationship with Russia and China.
Yeah.
And, you know, Russia and China have huge investments in Venezuela. They aren't going to let the U.S. walk away with that. So, I think it's difficult to overstate the significance of the of this election result in terms of a defeat for the United States, because it is a defeat. It doesn't matter how they spin it. So then, and that also explains events that are happening here in Nicaragua, for example,
right?
Which are Nicaragua is an unconditional ally of Venezuela and Cuba.
Right.
And so why would the United States care about a tiny country of a little over 6 million people? Because they need every vote they can get in the Organization of American States in order to institutionalize in the terms of international institutions and international relations to legitimize their aggression, their completely legitimate aggression against Venezuela. And so, and that's why they're putting so much pressure on Nicaragua, and in broader terms, they need all the help they can get in terms of their international foreign policy, which goes against decades of UN resolutions. And look at what's happening in Israel, and the United States government have moved their embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and who have they asked to support them doing that? Tiny countries like Paraguay, Honduras, right. And Guatemala. Why would they worry about the support of these small countries? Because they are desperate to try and legitimize their completely illegal and unlawful foreign policy decisions.
Well, this is like the annual ritual that took place at the UN for many years, where the General Assembly would vote on a condemnation resolution of the U.S. Sanctions against Cuba. And you would have, you know, the entire global community, say 189 of the 193 members of the UN, voting to condemn the United States, and on the other side, the U.S., Israel, and, say, Palau, or the Marshall Islands, which are essentially U.S. military bases in the Pacific. It's the same thing we see now with Israel. That's exactly right.
And those islands, it's way off our beat, but I mean, those Pacific islands are kind of almost literally colonial fiefdoms.
Yeah, if that.
Of U.S. allies like New Zealand and Australia.
That's right.
And New Zealand and Australia have zero moral credentials in terms of their abject implementation of colonial controls over those territories on behalf of United States interests. And there was an interesting article in Global Times on that subject, shame on New Zealand in particular for getting that is so many people regard as some kind of model of democracy.
I know, on somebody else's land. I don't want to run too far afield, and we're getting close to running out of time. You have Nicaragua's election in 2016 was a definite pushback in the trend that was being announced of this so-called rollback of the pink tide or the conservative restoration, when President Ortega essentially whooped some behind. He won with 72% of the vote in November of 2016, and the party secured more than two-thirds, or just exactly two-thirds, of the national legislature. You also have coming up, you know, you had the losses in Argentina and Venezuela a couple of years back in the National Assembly election, which has been corrected since in Venezuela, and the election of Macri in Argentina. Well, Macri's, you know, election, his day of reckoning is next year, and then the push out of Dilma Rousseff in Brazil, that day of reckoning is this year. In each of October 2018 and 2019, you have respectively Brazil's presidential election and then Argentina's. And, you know, those are the two heavy hitters in the region. And, also, you know, this,
also in Mexico.
Of course, that's right. That's huge. And so what happened, well, particularly, though, with respect to Argentina and Brazil, what happened in Venezuela yesterday is huge in that context. Maybe you could draw some lines to Mexico from Venezuela also.
Yeah, I'm the Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the progressive candidate there, and he's a kind of social democrat style nationalist politician. Who's been cheated of one election after another. He's now leading the electoral preferences in the opinion polls with something like 42% support. And his nearest rival is kind of on something like 29 or 30, something like that. In Mexico, and if Andrés Manuel López Obrador wins, and that too, in all the signs are that he'll win unless they assassinate him. And that, too, will be a tremendous setback for the United States in the region because under Peña Nieto, and Mexico has been a kind of supine right-wing ally, in certainly on regional terms, and although it's been followed a much more independent line in terms of its relations, global trade relations with China, for example. So, and if AMLO, as he's called in Mexico, wins there, depending, as you say, on what happens in Brazil this year, and it's still not clear whether Lula will actually be able to be a presidential candidate or not, that still has to be decided, although it looks almost impossible at the moment. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. So, this year, 2000, I remember saying that in a previous conversation that I thought 2018 would be a much more difficult, conflictive year, even than 2017. And I think that's proven to be the case because the United States is not going to have things all its own way, and it's not likely to react well to that fact.
Yeah, and we're looking at what's happened in this region sort of follow what happened in Africa under the Obama administration with it, and what happened in the Middle East and Southwest Asia in the previous administrations. You had a whole different landscape before the second war in Iraq in the Middle East, and also a whole different landscape in Africa before the takedown of Libya and Cote d'Ivoire, a reestablishment of French imperialism across Northwest Africa and West Africa, the consolidation of the militaries of 35 African countries into the U.S. African Command, essentially a recolonization of the African continent. A destruction, if you look at a map of the String of Pearls and the Silk Road running through the region, the Middle East, essentially craters where the U.S. just blew up some of those stepping stones. And now they turn their attention to Latin America. And although they've been taking it back piece by piece, this was a huge victory in Venezuela that I think is going to set the tone going forward. And since we're pretty much out of time, so I think to take this up again next week and maybe work, what else can happen this year.
Sure. Look forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tony. Thank you for your time, as always.
Okay.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.